Hi, good morning. It's Friday. It's July 10th, and this is now the 27th edition of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. Those of you familiar with it know that it's me, John Zogby, and my son and partner, Jeremy Zogby, having some fun and at the same time getting into some very serious stuff. Man doesn't eat, well, the Zogbys don't eat by politics alone, but it does take up a bit of our time. So we do talk about politics, but try to spend more of our time talking about the future and how to adjust to a period of change. Good morning, son. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Dad. Enjoying another beautiful week.
Yes. Yes, us too. Unfortunately, the president is not sharing in that good week. So why don't we get right into the politics of what's going on. God, we have an election less than 4 months from today. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I do. I know sometimes we forget about that with everything going on, but we actually have some new numbers. We did a poll earlier this week, and a lot of this data, just to let our listeners know, will be basically support the next three or four reports or issues of the Main Street, K Street intelligentsia. So we have some more fascinating questions. We'll maybe touch up on some of those and also talk about what could they can expect in the next issue. But first, Dad, what's on the election front?
Well, again, I can report if the election were held today, it would be a Joe Biden blowout. At least nationwide, what we're seeing is Biden maintaining a lead, not as large as our poll last month, however, where we had Biden leading by 13. Now we have Biden leading by 7, 49 to 42, with 9% unsure. And, you know, I'd like to actually drill down a little bit on this one, because here's an instance, mirror images, where Biden is scoring 90% support among Democrats, and that's good. That's what a partisan candidate should be doing. At the same time, Donald Trump is at 89% among Republicans, which means he's pretty much consolidated that base as well. The action, as always, is among independents and which way they go. And these numbers are interesting. They show Biden still maintaining a strong lead among independents, 11 points, 45% to 34% for Trump. But 1 in 5, 21% of independents are not sure, undecided who they're going to vote for. And that actually is about right. That's why so much attention, the tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of dollars that are spent from here on in are going to be spent either to depress soft supporters or to persuade just those relatively small numbers of independents which way to go. And that could mean not simply, hey, if you don't believe in my candidate, well, let me tell you something about the candidate you might be leaning toward that may want you to stay home in November. Here's the thing. Donald Trump maintains support among white voters by 10 points, 51 to 41. But on the flip side of this, Biden appears to be doing what he needs to do to win among Hispanics, 65 to 27, among Asians, 54 to 31. And among Blacks, 77 to 14. If anything, we can see where Biden should be a little concerned about that Black support and the need to prop it up. Biden needs 90% Black support. And the fact that Trump is posting 14% support among Blacks and 9% undecided, that means that down the wire, this could get interesting. The only final point that I'll make is about these numbers is that we watch, of course, 18 to 29-year-olds, and We've been polling for Forbes right along monthly. And in the last Forbes poll, what we showed was Biden leading by a margin of almost 30 points over 18 to 29 year olds over Trump. The kinds of numbers that Barack Obama had had both times he ran. And in this poll, among the segment who are 18 to 29, Biden leads 60 to 26. And that's a good sign for him. If anything, and I don't know if this poll is an anomaly or not, but last month we had Biden pulling a substantial lead among the oldest voters over 65 because of their concerns. They had supported Donald Trump as an age cohort. But this poll, we actually have a tie. Donald Trump at 45 and Joe Biden at 44 among voters over 65. So the lead and advantage Biden at the moment, but don't bet a lot of money just yet. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely right. And we kind of foreshadowed this in our last podcast, last week, when, I or maybe both of us questioned maybe Trump can make a comeback. And so our numbers show that that spread of 13% that Biden had over Trump over a month ago, has been reduced to half. And it begs the question, well, what happened? To my knowledge, I don't think Trump did anything spectacular in the last week. So it's the phenomenon of, and I wonder if this is the case that, you know, at some point there's blowback, right? And what I mean by that is, if there's such a concerted effort, you know, obviously not just from the DNC and the Democrats in Washington, but also the media in general, a lot of the major newspapers and the network news that just pump and pump and pump everything, all things anti-Trump, it can have blowback. And so I wonder if maybe some people are a small percentage of voters are while they're trying to figure out, all right, we're in the midst of tumultuous times. We're at a point in 2020 that's you know, historic. This we look to the future, and this is going to be written about in the history textbooks. Who do we want to be our leader? Well, this guy Donald Trump, you know, he says some pretty awful things. He says some pretty embarrassing things, but the other side hate him so much. The other side are going after everything, not just the big things or the things that deserve criticism, but even the smaller things. I wonder if that has a certain percentage of the voters scratching their head. Maybe this guy really is outside of the establishment. Maybe this guy is fighting the establishment. You know, and just to segue into the African-American vote, our poll is showing that Trump has 14%. That doesn't sound like a lot, but I think it's safe to say, at least in recent elections, Republicans are almost guaranteed 9 or 10% of the black vote. So going up to 14% is pretty significant. As you alluded to, Dad, Biden needs 90%. That will give him security. That will be a strong indicator that he could nab this election. So that it also begs the question, this is my second question, is given everything, you know, going around the country and in the news, George Floyd, Black Lives Matters, protests, riots, statues being pulled down, statues of, you know, Columbus, people calling into question Lincoln, Jefferson, George Washington. You know, before in the last 3, 4, 5 years, it wasn't uncommon to hear about, well, what about Stonewall Jackson or Robert E. Lee, the Confederate leaders, right? We could understand that, but now it's the so-called founding fathers being called into question whether they should even have statues or memorials. So what's going on where 14% of the black vote are behind Trump. And again, that's not insignificant. That's pretty significant. So just a brief review of the two questions. Why the spread or the reduction in the spread from 13 to 7% in terms of a lead that Biden has over Trump? And why the 14%? I think that's going to make some interesting discussion for this podcast today.
Yeah, it is. And I have some thoughts on it. Premise number one, under no stretch of the imagination is Donald Trump doing well. 42% for an incumbent, that is about 4 points lower than the votes, percentage of the votes that he received in 2016 is not good. And so he's on the ropes and not helping himself particularly on the ropes. Number two, as you're going to point out shortly, in this poll also, we asked about Black Lives Matter and about tearing down of statues, and we found that the voters are fairly evenly split on that. And that means that Trump maybe has some juice, again, among white voters and among some of the groups, including those older voters that had swung to Biden and now are possibly swinging back. We have to talk about that. But the other thing is that Joe Biden himself, I have talked before on this podcast about if I were him, I'd be doing exactly what he's doing, which is let the president run against himself. Let the president open his mouth. Let the president send out controversial tweets. Let the president insult respected figures. Let the president go after the left, because it's not helping him. And there's nothing in this poll that suggests that it is helping him. However, the time has come now, it looks, for Biden to start coming out. And as I think about it, he promised that he would have his major decision on a vice presidential nominee by August 1st. That seems to be good enough. I think he can hang on the way he is. Nothing is slipping out of his control. He still leads. Hang on for the next 3 weeks, and that decision will be momentous. I think it argues, as the numbers show here, for an African-American woman. That 77% support among African Americans needs to be bolstered. So he has to have, I think, in general, a woman of color, perhaps Tammy Duckworth, but I think the argument is for an African American woman, because that will ensure him getting up to that 90%. And then in August, he's got to come out fighting. Americans now have to know that they're voting again, not simply against Donald Trump, but who is Joe Biden? What's he going to be? Obviously, I think you're going to see that. But so I think at this point in time, with a 7-point lead, I don't think he's in any danger zone at all. If he can maintain this for the next few weeks, I think the news cycle then can very well become his from August on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that 42% isn't a stellar number, especially for an incumbent. But for a 13-point spread to be reduced to a little bit over half in just the course of the month, I think it needs some serious investigation as to what happened. The only other thing that I could think of, other than what I proposed, you know, a few minutes ago, the so-called blowback from the incessant attacks on the president. The only other thing that there could be is maybe people are just starting to wonder, well, where is Biden? You know, I guess Biden's in the basement. He does make appearances, obviously, but where is he? And so maybe it's just a factor having to do with he hasn't been out pounding the pavement as much, and perhaps, you know, that 13-point lead can come back in a month once he starts pounding the pavement, especially hitting the key swing states. But you mentioned about some of our questions. And by the way, I'm right now, we're looking at what's going to be the next Intelligencer theme and report, which is going to come out on July 15th. And there's a couple ideas swinging around, going back and forth. But one thing that jumps out at me when we look at the data is something to the effect of history wars, the battle mm-hmm. over historical narratives. And we had really three key questions that gets to the heart of this. And if I could just go through, and I'm just going to go top line. I'm just going to look at the overall percentage, overall breakdown of these three very key questions that get to the heart of what I'm calling history wars. And the first one is, which of the following, and forgive me, you know, this may be a little bit long, but which of the following statements comes closer to your view? We have statement A that says the U.S. is rooted in Anglo-Saxon values of freedom, democracy, and equality, and those from all backgrounds that have found success have done so because they have adopted those values. Statement B says that Native Americans, Latinos, Blacks, and immigrants have been sewed into the fabric of this nation since day one. American culture is a polyglot of many cultures and peoples, and we are well on our way to becoming a majority minority nation of cultures. We should celebrate this above any other narrative. So what is it, A versus B, the Anglo-Saxon tradition view or the multiculturalist view of American history? For the Anglo-Saxon narrative, 34% said that view came closer to theirs, versus statement B, the multiculturalist view of American history, 48%. So clearly, multiculturalism wins the day. But what happens when we look at the present and we look at the narrative of what's going on with Black Lives Matter? Statement A says, Black Lives Matter is a necessary and legitimate movement to create justice and equality where it has been missing for so long. That's statement A. Statement B says, Black Lives Matter are extremist opportunists bent on creating havoc and do not represent the Black community. 48% agree with statement A, that's more pro, and 42% agree with statement B. Hey, that sounds a lot like our Biden-Trump horse race numbers sure breakdown right there. And then the last one I'm going to read, which is, another one of those history battles-based questions. Which of the following statements comes closest to yours, to your view? Statement A says Confederate statues and flags are offensive and reveal a darker side of our history that we are trying to overcome. As a result, these symbols have to be removed completely from public spaces across the nation. Statement B says, however, the Confederacy is a part of American history, and despite being offensive to many, erasing history is a dangerous tool that has been used in totalitarian regimes and will threaten the American tradition of freedom of expression. 38% went with statement A, Confederate statues need to come down, they're offensive. 52% went with statement B, be careful going down the slippery slope of authoritarianism. What comes to mind when I think about that is Mao's Cultural Revolution in the 60s and 70s. So very fascinating numbers. How do you want to break that down, Dad, after hearing that?
Country split, and it's at a cusp. You know, it's at a cusp generationally. It's at a cusp culturally. We've kind of been here before, but perhaps maybe not as dramatically as. We did have a civil war, and the 1920s were a particularly bloody decade with with new immigrants and the Ku Klux Klan and so on. I guess the way we have to look at this is to not see Antifa versus those white supremacist, heavily tattooed, baseball cap wearing folks that represent both extremes. But, you know, folks in their day-to-day lives, what are they relating to? This is a legitimate conversation for this nation to be having. In terms of our history, some had come up with the possible solution of keeping the statues up, the Confederate statues up, but having, as you do on the air, a disclaimer with next to each statue. Here is Stonewall Jackson, who is revered for such and such, but here's also what you should know about Stonewall Jackson on a plaque. That at the time seemed to be a judicious way of handling it. Here is Christopher Columbus, respected, honored for having discovered, in quotes, the North American continent for the Europeans. On the other side, here is what Christopher Columbus actually did, how he, in fact, treated his own men. That seemed to be a fair representation, except I'm not a Native American, and I'm not an African American, and I'm not a Latino American. In their context, those statues really are an arrogant display of the worst elements of a Western civilization and a culture of slavery. And that's why we have to have this conversation. I don't mean that as a, in any way as a cop-out. It requires a conversation and a resolution. Otherwise, we could be permanently split.
Yeah, and you brought up the Civil War, and we asked that question. I was really curious to know how the public are processing this, and I'm going to share some shocking data. Now, look, none of this means that this is going to happen, but I think people need to hear this. I think people need to know, as you pointed out, Dad, too much of the conversation, and I this is how I interpreted what you said, too much of the conversation is being driven by the extremes on both sides. The vast majority of Americans do not fall within the extremes. I mean, I'm talking at least 90% of the public don't fall within, probably even more. But there is some concern about these extremist elements on both sides, so much that I wanted to know that when we asked the question, in light of recent events, do you believe America will eventually overcome the current wave of disunity, or America will eventually be pushed towards a civil war? 50%, almost a majority, believe that eventually we'll overcome the wave of disunity. However, alarmingly, a 31% believe that eventually we could be pushed towards a civil war, leaving 19% not sure.
Yeah, which means, you know, some reason to be optimistic, but on the other hand, that's a, you know, when you even raise the issue of a civil war, the fact that you have that many people, saying it could happen is particularly troubling to me. First Civil War, was a victory for the Union, and perhaps necessary, but it was an incredibly bloody war that actually still lives with us 160 years later.
Yeah, and isn't it true that whether the numbers are 600,000 or 700,000, if you take all of the other wars, the Revolution, the Spanish-American War, the Mexican-American War, World War I, World War II, Korean, Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan, and add the casualties of those wars, it doesn't even add up to the amount of deaths that we faced in the Civil War.
No, that's true. It doesn't. And this was brother against brother, sister against sister as well. And the wounds, well, we're still playing out those wounds.
So where does it all go from here? How do we avoid the past mistakes? How do we ensure that Civil War 2.0, and it doesn't necessarily have to mean in the sense of one half of the country invading another half or two halves of the country killing each other, but just, you know, maybe even intensified skirmishes throughout major cities or regions with a lot of bloodshed, but not necessarily the entire country being engulfed into the whole conflict. How do we avoid that mistake again?
Well, I think that the time has come for an entirely new constitutional convention. First one served us very, very well. It brought stability, it healed wounds, it created a system for peaceable discussion and the protection of rights and the growth of a government in our lives. But I think we're beyond a crossroads here. We need to talk again in a new context with technology of what is the relationship between the federal government and the states? What's the real relationship between the government and its people? What are the updates and tweaks that need to be made in government at all levels so that it's service oriented, much more efficient, much more quick, and not simply a place encumbered by red tape and by lifetimes of incompetence on the part of some or many bureaucrats. What's the relationship between the states going to be? What institutions are institutions that made a whole lot of sense the first couple of hundred years, but just don't seem to make sense anymore? And obviously, this is not a weekend in Washington. This is something that is to be done over a period of 5 or 10 years. But now's the time to do it, as so many factors are playing out before our eyes, not the least of which is technology and citizens' rights and the realities of technology versus the institutions that were created to serve a completely different society.
So I'll just conclude on my end with one more question that I'd like to share with our listeners. And we asked the public, which level of government do you trust the most? And they had the choice of local, meaning city, town, or village, state, national, or none of these. And so among those who said they trust most local government, that was 25%. Mm-hmm. Those who trust most state government, that was 28%. Those who trust the national government the most, 14%. And those who went with the choice none of these, 20%. If that doesn't support what you just said as far as a rethinking of where we're at in terms of our relationship to the various levels of government, I don't know what does.
Yeah, if public opinion drives this, nobody is scoring home runs right now. And particularly among young people, if you look at those numbers, and you know, you're looking at people under 40 who are going to be over 40% of the voters, maybe even more in this election in November. It's time that that point of view entered the debate, the discussion, and the reframing of this. But I was kind of I wasn't surprised by the numbers themselves. I was just stunned when I actually saw them. that none of these levels of government are particularly trusted.
Sure. So signing off on my end, getting ready for a good weekend, and I hope everyone else has a great weekend. Dad, any last words?
And same here. Thanks for listening, and please spread the word about both the Zogby Report and the Intelligencer, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care, everyone.